ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So we saw yesterday, now we're discussing the line of Bhrigu. And then hear how Pramati was going to marry this very beautiful girl, but then she died from a snake bite. Right? Because we see up to now is the discussion has been about the snake sacrifice. Right? That was how it opened, because they want to know the background behind the Bharata being spoken. So that was spoken at the snake sacrifice. So then, naturally, there'll be some history, just like the history, how is it the Bhagavatam was spoken. So then you have the whole history of the Pandavas and everything, down to Maharaj Parikit, and then his being cursed, and then the Bhagavatam is spoken. Does that make sense? So then, in the same fashion, then, like this. So now, the ninth pada. Sauti said, while those illustrious brahmanas were sitting around the dead body of Pramadvara, Rulu, sorely afflicted, retired into a deep wood and wept aloud. And overwhelmed with grief, he indulged in much piteous lamentation. Right? It's interesting. Indulged means that you don't have to do it, but you do it, you know. I mean, it's a natural thing. What we're saying indulge is that you make a conscious decision that you're going to be sad and you're going to express it. So therefore, here indulge doesn't necessarily mean bad. It just meant he took part in, you know. And generally it has a tendency to mean that one finds some satisfaction in that. And remembering his beloved Pramadvara, he gave vent to his sorrow in the following words. Alas, the delicate fair one that increased my affliction lieth upon the bare ground. What can be more deplorable to us, her friends? If I have been charitable, if I have performed acts of penance, if I have ever revered my superiors, let the merit of those acts restore to life my beloved one. If from my birth I have been controlling my passions, adhered to my vows, let the fair Pramadvara rise from the ground. Right? It means he's not just saying, because I want to. He's saying, due to charity, penance, respect for authority, controlling of the senses, following one's vows. Right? These are things that have potency. So he's saying, based on that, he's not just saying, based on because I want to, or how could you allow this to happen, you know, God, or anything like this. Does that make sense? And while Ruru was indulging in these lamentations for the loss of his bride, a messenger from heaven came to him in the forest and addressed him thus, "The words thou utterest, O Ruru, in thy affliction are certainly ineffectual," right? Just because he said that doesn't mean it'll happen, right? It means we feel like it would be nice if it did, but what he's saying is, in reality, you say all these nice things, but they're not going to do anything. For, O pious man, one belonging to this world, whose days have run out, can never come back to life. This poor child of a Gandharva and Apsara has had her days run out. Therefore, O child, thou shouldest not consign thy heart to sorrow. The great gods, however, have provided beforehand a means for her restoration to life, and if thou compliest with it, thou mayest receive back thy Pramadvara. Right? In other words, just because you said, I trade my pious activities, my this, that, if I've ever done anything, then please let this happen, then that's not how it works, right? Whatever you do will happen, and whatever someone else's do, they'll get. Right, but he says, but they've given some other means that is practical, how you can bring her back to life. Right? And Ruru replied, O messenger of heaven, what is that which the gods have ordained? Tell me in full, so that on hearing I may comply with it. It behooveth thee to deliver me from grief. And the celestial messenger said unto Ruru, resign half of thy own life to thy bride, and then, O Ruru of the race of Bhrigu, thy Pramadvara shall rise from the ground. O best of the celestials, I most willingly offer a moiety of my own life in favor of my bride. Then let my beloved rise up once more in her dress and lovable form. Right? So it's like you say, oh, I've done this pious activity, that pious activity, this, that, and therefore then no bad will happen to me. It means this, any good that will happen to you is from that. Bad will come from when you didn't do that. Right? But here it's like, okay, you wanted to come back to life? Fine. Give half of your life. You know, then it's kind of like, then you see, is this guy serious? Right? You know? You know, like that. Sauti said, then the king of the Gandharvas, the father of Pramadvara, and the celestial messenger, both of excellent qualities, went to the god Dharma, the judge of death, and addressed him, saying, because you have to have good connections here, if it be thy will, O Dharmaraj, let the amiable Pramadvara, the betrothed wife of Ruru, now lying dead, rise up with a moiety of Ruru's life. And Dharmaraj answered, O messenger of the gods, if it be thy wish, let Pramadvara, the beloved, the betrothed wife of Ruru, rise up, endued with a moiety of Ruru's life. Sauti continued, and then Dharmaraj, and when Dharmaraj had said so, the maiden of superior complexion, Pramadvara, endued with a moiety of Ruru's life, rose as if from her slumber. The bestowal by Ruru of a moiety of his own span of life to resuscitate the bride afterwards led, as it would be seen, to a curtailment of Ruru's life. Right? So it means, you know, if he was going to live 100 years, not only live 50, like that. And on an auspicious day, their fathers gladly married them with due rites, and the couple passed their days devoted to each other. And Ruru, having obtained such a wife, as is hard to be found, beautiful and bright as the filaments of the lotus, made a vow for the destruction of the serpent race. Okay, now we understand the connection. Right? But if we just said, you know, his wife got bit by a snake, so he got angry, and so therefore then he decided to bother the snakes, then it's kind of like, okay, nice, but, you know, so you have to give the whole... Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's difficult to be found. So that she was beautiful wasn't what was difficult. So many girls may be beautiful, but to be beautiful and to have character, to have good qualities, that's what's hard to find. So we find the real point is the good qualities. Does that make sense? So that's the most important. So that any girl can have if she makes that endeavor. Right? So now, of course, we see here is that this girl is, okay, she's a nice girl, but who are we discussing her in connection with? Right? Some Joe off the street? Right? No. A son in the dynasty of Bhrigu. Right? So that meant his qualities were very great. Otherwise, why would, the celestial messengers come if he wasn't something special? Right? Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point. A qualified boy marries a qualified girl, right? And vice versa. Right? We don't... it looks attractive, it's nice, that's not enough. Because how much you can just sit and look at something attractive? Right? I give you a nice flower where you stare at it all day, or a nice picture, or I'll give you a mirror, you can look at yourself, you know, how long will you look? Does that make sense? So that's the point. Beauty has its limit. It's nice, but, you know, that's not the ultimate point. Right? So that's why in the Vedic culture, then, at studentship, one focuses on developing good qualities, right? And the knowledge by which to engage in activities, right? By good qualities, you'll be engaged properly in activities. By knowledge, then you'll understand what you're doing in these activities and how to connect them properly to Krishna, how they're pleasing to Krishna and the devotees. That's the thing to get now, right? Does that make sense? Marriage life is always there. It's the thing that does not go away, right? If you look in this world, basically everybody is involved in marriage life, right? So to be involved in studentship without that, that is the rare thing. That's what's special, right? One thinks, oh, we're in the school and everybody is here and nobody's over in the park hanging out with the girls, so that's what's special. No, that's what's downright ordinary, right? You ever heard of a brahmachari, strict brahmachari dog? Or cat or monkey? Huh? Hanuman, okay. Okay, here we go. So that's one, okay. Huh? Does this make sense? So the point is that's ordinary. Every bird, bug, beast, you know, if it walks on two legs, four legs, slithers on the grounds, has a million legs, doesn't matter. They're all grihasthas. Right? Does that make sense? So brahmacharya is what's special. And believe it or not, what is rare is what is desirable. You understand? Something that everybody else has, nobody cares for. Right? But what is rare, that is what's special. Right? So being a good brahmachari, that's special. Right? Does that make sense? Did you catch the connection, or was that a little too subtle? A little too subtle. Anything ordinary, girls don't go for. It has to be special. So special doesn't mean a fancy border or earrings or you got a cool aluminum bicycle or, you know, you have, a cool tattoo or, you know, your sikha is bigger than anybody else's or you have a monster kabocha that nobody else has or, you know what I'm saying, like that. Does that make sense? So all the things that you think are the cool things that impress the girls, that's not what impresses the girls, because everybody's got them. Right? Okay, like here, you have a big monster sports watch. Just look to your left. Your left. He's got a big monster sports watch. Oh my God. And then look to the left of that. He's got one also. Oh no. You know? You know what I'm saying? Does this make some sense? So, all these things that... you forgot the big Sika one. Yeah, sure. You're working on it. Okay, does this make some sense? So, these aren't the things that impress the girls. Right? What impresses the girls is someone who has good character, who's going to be stable, right? If you're going to be crazy like a girl, then they don't need a boy, right? Does that make sense? Like, girls turn to boys because they're supposed to be stable, steady, have a standard, you know, something that's worth following, right? Right? Like that? So that's what one develops, like that. And then it will be noticed. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. That you walk down the street, all the girls are, you know, how you say, what was that? That one commercial. It's one kind of deodorant. When the guy walks down the street, all the girls come out of all the shops and are chasing him down the street like that. Those aren't the ones you want to marry. It's the ones that have noticed that you have good qualities as a brahmachari and keeps their mouth shut. They're the ones. Does that make sense? It's a whole different system. And the girl who's out on the street and letting everybody know how beautiful she is, that's also not the one to marry. Right? It's the one that's quiet and is developing their good qualities. Does this make sense? Right? So that's the idea in the Vedic culture. Right? Because you have qualities, they have qualities. You know, with the proper arrangements, a marriage happens, then you're able to live with them the one's whole life. one's able to engage oneself properly in Krishna's service, one's able to go back to Godhead. Right? That's what the Vedic culture is for. Right? Or, if you don't like that, then you can be a little more contemporary, then you catch whatever you can on the street. They look good, but somehow or another, when you live with them, they're not as good. And, you know, you can get divorced a few times, and, you know, hey, third time's a charm, you know, when you're 50 years old, get married for the third time, and finally work it out, you know, have a daughter, hey, you know, and she'll get married when she's 18, 20 or so, so you'll be, you know, 75-year-old geezer. I'm sure that there'll be somebody in your family who will wheel you in your wheelchair to your daughter's marriage. Like that. I'm sure that someone will do that for you out of affection. And, you know, then after that, yeah, then, you know, you can move on, you know, take sannyas or whatever it is, you know, if you don't have a heart attack at the wedding. But, you know, like that. So, hey, the choice is yours. You know, it's your life, you know, why should we get in the way, you know, like that. Does that make some sense? Yeah? Okay. Okay. So that's also why these stories are here. Because then you see, what are the qualifications? Right? Does that make sense? You can tell just by how it's used and the descriptions, just how nicely they behave. Right? Yeah? Yeah. Surpassed all in goodness, beauty, and every quality. Right? Because beauty is actually... the brightness of the subtle body. Does that make sense? You know, like somebody's happy, they look very attractive. When they're not happy, they don't look. Does that make sense? So it's actually got to do, the body doesn't change, it's to do with the brightness. Does that make sense? So actually when you say beauty, it means that. So because every quality is there. Does that make sense? Ah, okay, so now, beautiful, bright, as the filaments of the lotus, right? They're like a golden color. So Ruru made a vow for the destruction of the serpent race. And whenever he saw a serpent, he became filled with great wrath and always killed it with a weapon. One day, O Brahmana, Ruru entered an extensive forest. And there he saw an old serpent of the Dunduba species. You've seen him here? Dunduba. Those, I think we call them here Darash. They're a big monster, like 7-8 foot, you know, big kind of like purpley snakes, big fat guys. But they're not poisonous, you know. Like that. Lying stretched on the ground. And Ruru thereupon lifted up in anger his staff, even like to the staff of death, for the purpose of killing it. Then the Dunduba, addressing Ruru, said, I have done thee no harm, O Brahmana. Then wherefore wilt thou slay me in anger? Right? In other words, I haven't done anything, so it's not... What would be the cause? Why? How do you justly feel? So ends the ninth section of the Paloma Parva, of the Adi Parva, of the blessed Mahabharata. Pada 10. Sauti said... And Ruru, on hearing those words, replied, My wife, dear to me as life, was bit by a snake, upon which I took, O snake, a dreadful vow, namely that I would kill every snake that I might come across. Therefore I shall smite thee, and thou shalt be deprived of life. And the Dunduba replied, right, very straightforward, but very poetic, right? And the Dunduba replied, O Brahmana, the snakes that bite man are quite different in type. It behooveth thee not to slay Dundubas, who are serpents only in name, subject like other serpents to the same calamities, but not sharing their good fortune, right? In other words, it says we're snakes in name only. We can't bite anyone, you know, it's like that. So it says, you know, we get killed like this poisonous snakes, but we don't have the, how you say, the benefit of having the ability to bite back, right? In woe the same, but in joy different. Right? The Dunduba should not be slain by thee under any misconception. Sauti continued, And the Rishi Ruru, hearing these words of the serpent, and seeing that it was bewildered with fear, albeit a snake of the Dunduba species, killed it not. and Ruru, the possessor of the six attributes, comforting the snake, addressing it, saying, "Tell me fully, O snake, who art thou? This, who art thou? Thus metamorphosed."
See?
He's got one of those little boxes and that. You go inside and you. Oh, that's a transmogrifier. Okay, that's different. Okay. And the Dundaba replied, "O Ruru, I was formerly a rishi by name Sahasrapat, and it was by the curse of a Brahman that I have been transformed into a snake." And Ruru asked, "O best of snakes, for what wast thou cursed by a Brahmana in wrath, and how long also wilt thy form continue so?" And so ends the 10th section of the Paloma Parva of the Adi Parva. Notice here is that it's a complete, a pada is a complete like thought. This is very important. So this is, some of these are even less like half a page, and it's a complete pada or a chapter, while others may take many, many, many pages. But the concept is it's a complete thought, and that from that, you know, you can get some understanding. It finishes something, then you move on to the next, right? It's very important that when you're dealing with things that you don't go by size, you go by completeness. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, in Sanskrit drama, the importance of is finishing an emotional exchange, right? Emotional experience, not a series of events, right? Modern theater is the completion of a series of external events, right? Then it moves to the next scene. But the Vedic is what completes a, you know, an emotional exchange or situation. Does that make sense? Otherwise, as soon as that emotion's done, it can move into the next scene with no seeming connection. Does that make sense? Because that's actually how the mind works. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, if it's only the scene, what you want to get from the scene is only part of it. So that means much of the time you're only working on the intellectual platform. So how much emotion you can gain from the drama is less. Well, if it only is moving on the emotional theme, and that's what makes the form of it, then you get so much more out of the particular, how you say, drama. Like that. Wow, I just noticed on the next page there's a pada that's only about a third of the page. Okay. So here also we see is that this point is that it's intelligent. The other person is feeling some difficulty. This must be considered, right? You have your plan. Just because you have your plan doesn't mean that it's the best plan, right? It may work for most situations, but if the situation it doesn't, it has to be changed, right? He made a vow, "I'll kill all snakes." Okay, great. But then this snake then pointed out, but why non-poisonous snakes? Well, you know, you kill poisonous snakes, not non-poisonous. Your wife was bit by a poisonous snake, not by a non-poisonous snake. Right? Does that make sense? And it was bewildered with fear. So therefore, if someone's fearful, that you don't want to make others fearful. Right? That's not what cultured persons do. Like you're walking down the path, and there is a bird sitting on the side of the path. Right? So because in the ashram we don't bother the birds, then they're peaceful. So now because it's close by, and just because you could, you know, wave your hands and make some noise and scare it, why would you do it? Right? So why would you want to create fear? Does it make you feel good? Does it make you feel powerful? Does that, wow, yes, I am the scarer of pigeons. Oh ye scarer of pigeons, come forth and protect us with your mighty waving arms. Does that make sense? Alright, so don't do that kind of stuff, right? Because it's having trust, you don't break that trust. Because if you do that here, you'll do that in other relationships. And when you break trust, relationships are harder to make operate. Does that make sense? Yes? Oh, squasher of the ants. Yes. Okay. Sauti said, the Dundaba then said, in former times I had a friend, Kadgama by name. He was impetuous in his speech and possessed of spiritual power by virtue of his austerities. Impetuous generally means that one is very forceful in expressing one's, or let's say, very forceful in achieving one's emotional needs. Would that be? That's what I'm saying, but in emotion. You know, if he's just physical, you call him aggressive. But if they're emotionally aggressive, meaning to get that, you call him impetuous. You know, you should do this, I don't want to do this, I have to have this, that's impetuous. He was impetuous in his speech and possessed of spiritual power by virtue of his austerities. And one day, when he was engaged in the Agnihotra, fire sacrifice, I made a mock snake of blades of grass, and in a frolic attempted to frighten him with it. Right? Sound familiar? Be careful. And anon he fell into a swoon. On recovering his senses, that truth-telling and vow-observing ascetic, burning with wrath, exclaimed, "Since thou hast made a powerless mock snake to frighten me, thou shalt be turned even into a venomous snake, a serpent thyself, by my curse." Right? So to be a snake and not have venom, that's a bit of a curse, right? Unless you're around here, okay? "O ascetic, I well knew the power of his penances. Therefore, with an agitated heart, I addressed him thus, bending low with joined hands. Friend, I did this by way of a joke, to excite thy laughter," right? "It behooveth thee to forgive me and revoke thy curse." And seeing me sorely troubled, the ascetic was moved, and he replied, breathing hot and hard, "What I have said must come to pass. Listen to what I say and lay it to thy heart, O pious one. When Ruru, the pure son of Pramati, will appear, thou shalt be delivered from the curse the moment thou seest him. Thou art the very Ruru and the son of Pramati. On regaining my native form, I will tell thee something for thy good." Right? So even here, as if it's a joke, if it didn't actually come out as a joke, one should not, stand on one's ego and claim that it was just a joke. Because a joke's supposed to be funny, right? So many times you're seeing there, you come along and one of the kids is crying and the other one's smiling. And you say, you know, why is he crying? "Oh, I was joking." If you were joking, why is he crying? Like that. Joke means both laugh. If one laughs, one cries, that's not called a joke. Okay? We understand this very minor English definition of terms here. Yes? In our hearing? Understand that? Okay. Okay? Does that make sense? Right, so therefore here, especially, you know, you're playing around with people that have some spiritual potency, so joker beware. Right? And that illustrious man and the best of brahmanas then left his snake body and attained his own form and original brightness. He then addressed the following words to Ruru of incomparable power. "O thou first of created beings, verily the highest virtue of man is sparing the life of others. Therefore a Brahman should never take the life of any creature. A Brahmana should ever be mild. This is the most sacred injunction of the Vedas." In other words, being non-violent, right? So the highest form of, I mean, of course we understand non-violence meaning not disturbing other creatures. But the highest form of non-violence, the highest form of non-violence is giving Krishna consciousness, right? Because violence is against the nature of the living entity, right? means the ant is sitting there and its nature is to wander around, not to be squashed flat. Does that make sense? So, therefore it's called violence because it was against the nature. Right? If somebody dies on their own, you don't call it violence. But they weren't supposed to die then, and they did, so that's called violence. Does that make sense? So the nature of the soul is to be connected to Krishna. And so when it is, then that is proper. But when it's not, that's violence. Does that make sense? But it mentions here mild. So that presentation is also mild. Yeah? Okay. A brahmana should be versed in the Vedas and Vedangas, right? Vedas are, you know, the various mantras that we use, you know, for our the various rituals. And the Vedangas means Sanskrit, you know, math and astrology and the rituals of yajna and all those samskars, right? So this is Brahminical culture. That's what you should all be learning and knowing, right? Because if you know that, then you can say you're educated. Does that make sense? A Brahmin should be versed in the Vedas and Vedangas and should inspire all creatures with belief in God. Right? So that's your Mimamsa, your philosophy. Then the Puranas are used to do that. You use logic, Nyaya, and the example of all those people would be based on Dharma Shastra. Right? So Veda, Vedanga, and the Upangas. Right? Someone who knows these, they're called knowledgeable. Right? This is Brahminical culture. He should be benevolent to all creatures, truthful and forgiving, even as it is his paramount duty to retain the Vedas in his memory. Right? So to know the scriptures, that's the topmost duty of a Brahmin. The duties of the Kshatriya are not thine. Right? To be stern, now he's telling what the Kshatriyas do. To be stern, to wield the scepter, and to rule the subjects properly are the duties of the Kshatriya. Right? Wield the scepter means authority. Right? And to rule the subjects properly. So that means, according to the rules, is how he's supposed to take care. It's not just a matter of passion or yelling and screaming or because you're aggravated and because you fight with everyone that makes you Kshatriya. No, that makes you an uncultured Shudra. Right? Because anger comes from the mode of passion. I mean, ignorance. It may be used by the Kshatriyas, but it's not their normal state. Right? Yudhishthira, we don't see him always angry. Even Bhima, we don't see him always angry. He's submissive to his brother, he's got a good service attitude. Only when there's a Rakshasa or someone else, then he gets angry. Does that make sense? But if one is always angry, always fighting, that's a Shudra. Never think that that's a Kshatriya. Someone's tough, someone's cool, you know, like that, and always showing off martial arts moves and kicking and punching people. No, that is a Shudra, not a Kshatriya, right? Most likely he wouldn't even get a job, you know, a bouncer at a pub, but, you know, because the real guy won't do that, but, you know what I'm saying? You can add that onto the previous list of what I was talking about of the, you know, all the cool stuff that the cool dudes do to attract the girls. So that's another one of those so-called bogus stuff. Okay. Listen, O Ruru, to the account of the destruction of snakes at the sacrifice of Janamejaya in days of yore, and the deliverance of the terrified reptiles by that best of dwijas, Astika, profound in Vedic lore and might in spiritual energy. Right? Wow. This is cool. Appears we're going to hear. Hear the story of the snake sacrifice now from the snake. Like that. So you have Sauti speaking and then about this pastime. And then now they're probably going to tell the rest of it. Sauti continued. Now, so then the 11th section of the Paloma Parva, the Adi Parva. Pada 12. Sauti continued, Ruru then asked, O best of Dwijas, why was King Janamejaya bent upon destroying the serpents? And why and how were they saved by the wise Astika? I am anxious to hear all this in detail. The Rishi replied, O Ruru, the important history of Astika you will learn from the lips of Brahmanas. Saying this, he vanished. Oh, he said you should hear this. Okay, now I get it. Means he said you should hear, because he wanted to kill all the snakes, so he should hear the story of Astika, who is a Brahmin who saved the snakes, right? So even though they should all be killed by the curse, he's just doing it because he's upset, but still they were saved. So this would be for his benefit. Sauti continued, Ruru ran about in search of the missing Rishi, and having failed to find him in all the woods, fell down on the ground, fatigued. And revolving in his mind the words of the Rishi, he was greatly confounded, and he seemed to be deprived of his senses. Regaining consciousness, he came home and asked his father to relate the history in question. His father related all about the story. So ends the 12th section of the Paloma Parva, of the Yadi Parva. One other thing of the thing before is he was showing that the Brahmanas are ever mild and forgiving and nonviolent, so he's a Brahmin, therefore she shouldn't be killing the snakes. And the Kshatriya, he wields the scepter of authority, but he does it according to the rules of that are proper, according to his duty. So therefore he also wouldn't be killing the snakes if there's no reason. Right? So one who can kill wouldn't be. And one who shouldn't be, you know, shouldn't be doing that. Right? Does that make sense? Pada 13. Now we move, that's the end of the Paloma Parva. You know, the subsection Paloma, now we move into the Astika Parva, which I think will go quite a ways now. So this is Pada 13. Shaunaka said, for what reason did that tiger amongst kings, the royal Janamejaya, determine to take the lives of the snakes by means of a sacrifice? O Sauti, tell us in full the true story. Tell us also why Astika, that best of regenerate ones, right? This is regenerate, means they're developing, they're progressing. Degenerate means they're getting worse and worse. So someone's a degenerate means every day is getting worse in character. So regenerate means every day his character is increasing. Okay? Does that make sense? Tell us also why Astika, that best of regenerate ones, that foremost of ascetics, rescued the snakes from the blazing fire. And whose son was that monarch who celebrated the snake sacrifice? And whose son also was the best of regenerate ones? Right, so now tell us about Astika, right, who saved the snakes. And then about the monarch himself and whose son he was. Right? And also then who was Astika the son of. In other words, Astika and then his family history, and then the king who is performing the sacrifice, Janamejaya, and his family history, right? Because otherwise, if you just know the one thing, you may not know it in context. You know, sometimes in pragmatism, we just want to get just to the point, and that's okay if you're intelligent enough to take the point and apply it in all situations. But to fully understand the point, you sometimes need to understand the situation in which it's being applied. So when we understand the history of Astika, the history of Janamejaya, then we can understand actually what's going on, rather than here you got this aggro king doing a sacrifice and, you know, seemingly a sentimental Brahmin just coming along saying, don't kill the snakes. You know what I'm saying? So how does this go back? Why would Astika say this? Why would Janamejaya do the snake sacrifice? Okay? Then you can understand. Then you can get the proper picture that both of them are acting properly. Sauti said, O best of speakers, this story of Astika is long. I will duly relate it in full, O listen. Right? Saunaka said, So this is the next story. Right now, we've gotten down to here. So you've gotten Ruru, you know, killing the snakes. So therefore, he is then hearing the story of Astika, which is, you know, how the whole snake sacrifice will be described. And then we saw Utanka, then he's the one that went and inspired Janamejaya to have the snake sacrifice. Right? We'll go back to that later. Does that make sense? Okay, so it's all related here. Sati said, this history first recited by Krishna Dvaipayana is called a Purana by the Brahmanas. It was formerly narrated by my wise father, Lomaharshana, the disciple of Vyasadeva, before the dwellers of the Naimisha forest at their request. I was present at the recital and, O Shonaka, since thou askest me, I shall narrate the history of Astika exactly as I heard it. Oh, listen, as I recite in full that sin-destroying story. Right, so it itself is considered a Purana, right? So it is quite complete. The father of Astika was powerful like Prajapati. He was a Brahmachari. Always engaged in austere devotions, you know, like, always engaged in austere devotions. Because it's cut by the next one. I was going to say, very austere to eat so much before you go to sleep at night. He ate sparingly. He was a great ascetic and had his lust under complete control. Right? These are Brahmacharis. This is what a Brahmachari's got to do? Oh my God. And he was known by the name of Jarat Karu. Right? Jarat Karu. And I think it'll say later, but it means, Jarat means, I think, great, isn't it? And Karu means waste. So Jarat Karu means great waste, means he just so austere that he completely wasted his body, right? So this guy could say, well, he's wasted. Like that. So that's his name. What do you mean he's wasted? That's his name, right? That foremost one among the Yayavaras, right? But he's not from South America. Virtuous and of rigid vows, highly blessed and endued with great ascetic power. Sorry. Once undertook a journey over the world. He visited diverse places, bathed in diverse sacred rivers, and rested where night overtook him. In other words, he had no place to live. He had no house, no place to live. That's what a yayavara is. Yayavaras, you'd say? Yayavaras, or like that. Means they take a vow. He was a brahmachari, but there's also grihasthas like that. They take a vow. They don't have a home. They just wander like that. And when night falls, wherever they are, that becomes their house. Whatever tree or whatever veranda, or they're at a temple, it doesn't matter. That's where they stay the night. And then as soon as the sun comes up, again they move. So it's one particular class of Brahmins that, you know, this is their vow. Okay. Endued with great energy, he practiced religious austerities, hard to be practiced by men of unrestrained souls. Right? Those who are not austere couldn't do. The sage lived upon air only. That's austere. And renounced sleep forever. Even more austere. Thus going about like a blazing fire, one day he happened to see his ancestors hanging heads down in a great hole, their feet pointing upwards. On seeing them, Jarat Karu addressed them, saying, who are you thus hanging heads down in this hole by a rope of viran or fibers that is again secretly eaten into on all sides by a rat living there, right? It means there's a rope that's there over this, on this hole, they're tied to this, and the rat is eating this rope, like that. On seeing them, Jarat Karu addressed them, The ancestors said, we are rishis of rigid vows called Yayavaras. We are sinking low into the earth for want of offspring. We have a son named Jarat Karu. Woe to us. That wretch hath entered upon a life of austerities only. The fool doth not think of raising offspring by marriage. It is for that reason, namely, the fear of extinction of our race, that we are suspended in this hole. Possessed of means, we are like unfortunates that have none. That means even though we have descendants like that, so there could be a son, but we don't have. Does that make sense? One may say, well, why are they saying he's a wretch for being a good brahmachari? That's because he's a brahmachari who, by his austerities, right, all these things, not eating, not sleeping, just not having a residence, very great austerities, he wants to use that to go to the heavenly planets, right? So the heavenly planets, the enjoyments there, are for grihasthas, right? It's not that he wants to, as a brahmachari, go to Tapaloka or Satyaloka like this, where they continue a life of austerities. He wants to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy as a grihastha. Therefore, he has to do the grihastha duties here. Does that make sense? So his only fault is because he wants to use that brahmacharya to get to the heavenly planets. If he wanted to use it to get to the, you know, the planets of the yogis, or go to the Brahman, or go back to Godhead, then he wouldn't be at fault. The forefathers couldn't say this, right? But because they were married, they had children, therefore he's there. And from that he can go to the heavenly planets. They owe him a debt. That means that he has to leave his son, who is going to perform the Shraddha ceremonies. Does that make sense? Like that. O excellent one, who art thou that thus sorroweth as a friend on our account? Right? It means, you know, who are you that you're, you know, feeling bad for us, right? He could have just walked by, you know, like that. So, you know, how you say? The New York attitude isn't new, right? We desire to learn, O Brahmana, who thou art that standest by us, and why, O best of men, thou sorrowest for us that are so unfortunate. Jarakaru said, ye are even my sires and grandsires. I am that Jarakaru. O tell me how I may serve you. The fathers then answered, try thy best, O child, to beget a son to extend our line. Thou wilt then, O excellent one, have done a meritorious act for both thyself and us. Not by the fruits of virtue, not by ascetic penances, well hoarded up, acquireth a merit, which one doth by becoming a father. Right? Because you do all these things, it's just like this. If I get something, I get some money, that's great. But if the money disappears, therefore it's not so great. So being able to maintain that money, that's more important. Does that make sense? So you performed all this merit that you can go to the heavenly planets, but you can only stay there because you have the son, the grandson, the great-grandson are performing the Shraddha rites. Does that make sense? So that's why he's pointing out here the most important thing, therefore, for the Karmakandi, not for devotees, is to have a son. Right? That's why you see all throughout Mahabharata and other Puranic literature that the kings and others are in great anxiety to have a son, because it's their duty, right? But if they're devotees, then that doesn't matter. Does that make sense? One's point is to be Krishna conscious, and whoever's connected you to make them Krishna conscious. Yeah? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's a different thing. Therefore, O child, by our command, set thy heart upon marriage and offspring. Even this is our highest good. Right? Jarakaru replied, right, because he's a Karmakandi, right, then they can make this demand. Right? Because he is a Karmakandi, they can make this demand. If he wasn't a Karmakandi, they can request, but he doesn't have to follow. Like you see Lord Brahma then ordered the four Kumaras to get married, and they said no. Even though he's the father, even though he's Lord Brahma, he's the guru, it doesn't matter. It's the one, Prabhupada says, it's the one order you don't have to follow of the guru, is to get married. You know, if you're determined on going back to Godhead, leading a life of simplicity. Does that make sense? Yeah? If one's just... you know how you say one of these park vasis, then if one's ordered to get married, one does. Then it would be improper. Jagatkaru replied, I shall not marry for my sake. Yes. A park vasi. Vasi means, well, actually, we should probably be better to say park nivasi, but whatever. One who resides in the park, right? One whose life is in the park. You know, so sitting on the swings, checking out what's walking by, trying to start up conversations, you know, that's a park vasi. Yeah? Okay. Why is everybody laughing? You know, you have Brajavasis, those who live in the Vrindavan, and you have park vasis. Okay. Jagatkaru replied, I shall not marry for my sake, nor shall I earn wealth for enjoyment, but I shall do so for your welfare only. Right? So this is Naishkarmya. Right? It's that it's one's duty, so therefore one's doing it, not for oneself. He didn't say he wouldn't earn wealth, he wouldn't get married. He says, I'm not going to do it for myself. I don't need it, but for duty it's necessary. So that's the point, is so much in our duties, whatever it is, we may or may not need it, but we do it. Does that make sense? Right? Then there's great benefit in that. Because that's the whole point in the spiritual world. You serve Krishna. It's for his benefit, not for ours. Right? So that's how we can practice this important principle, this character, even though we don't have love for Krishna or an interest in Krishna. But it's practice. So therefore, imagine such a detached person, dutiful person, who now you just added Krishna to their life. That means everything they would do would only be to please Krishna. Does that make sense? That's the value of the pious, being trained in the pious activities, right? Is that when one does become serious about Krishna consciousness, you already have very good character on which to base it on. That's why for student life, the emphasis is so much on developing character. Because if that is there, then when you become serious about Krishna consciousness, it will be very easy. Because all the aspects of good character demanded by the Vedic culture are the culture by which those in the spiritual world worship Krishna. You understand? They're very pure, right? Their senses are controlled. They're very respectful, right? They're respectful to all the other devotees, right? They always perform their duties, right? Does this make some sense? Like this. They always have a good service attitude. They have they're able to do menial service. Right? They have knowledge. You know, what to do, what not to do. Does that make sense? They have culture. They know how to interact nicely with others. Does that make sense? So all those qualities which the Vedic culture is saying is all the same qualities that are used in the spiritual world in connection with Krishna. So, at least if you aren't Krishna conscious, at least if you have this good character, then you're not going to disturb those who are Krishna conscious. And if you do decide to become Krishna conscious, then you're already well ahead. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not that, oh, we only worry about devotional service, we don't worry about these other qualities. That's true. In that we don't worry about these qualities separate than devotional service. Right? So we don't just develop good qualities and not worry about the bhakti. That's for, you know, pious people. We're devotees, so we worry about both. Because otherwise, you may be so-called Krishna conscious, but if you don't have the character to interface with the devotees, if you can't do that here, how you'll do it there? Right? I can't play Madanga here in my house, but when I go to the temple, I'll be, you know, a hot Madanga player. Does it work like that? No. So if you don't have character and can work peacefully with the devotees here, you won't be able to do it there. You're the same person. You just go from here to there. Does that make sense? right? And if you fight with everybody here, when you go somewhere else, you'll fight with everybody there, right? It just works like that. Does that make sense? So that's why the character is developed, but in connection with Krishna. This is how Krishna likes his pastimes to go on. So for us, therefore, the humility, service attitude, these are necessary. That's what they do. Right? That's what they do. Does that make sense? So that's why so much service and other things are there. So you learn that. Because that's what you're going to do in the spiritual world. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
According to this understanding, right, that he's not going to marry or develop wealth for himself, according to that, I shall agreeably to the Shastric ordinance take a wife for attaining the end. I shall not act otherwise. If a bride may be had, now these are his conditions. If a bride may be had of the same name with me, whose friends would, besides, willingly give her to me as a charity, gift in charity, I shall wed her duly. But who will give his daughter to a poor man like me for a wife? Right? In other words, he's going to give willingly. There's not some other. And she has to have the same name. Right? Also Jarakaru. Right? So it means his point is here is, I'm very austere, therefore I've gotten this name. She should be that austere. In other words, we should be equal by nature. Right? That's another reason why one doesn't just look for beauty. Right? Because the nature has to be equal. That's what's important. Because that's what the marriage is the equal nature, not that someone's beautiful or this and that. Does that make sense? I shall, however, accept any daughter given to me as alms. Right? Because he'll perform his duties. He's not saying this one or that one. You know, his point is a qualified girl who's of equal nature, I will marry and perform my duties, right? Same way the girls are trained. Is that someone who is of equal nature, this and that, they will marry whoever it is, and they will perform their duties, right? So it's not just only this one or only that one. It means that may develop with time, you know what I'm saying? But that's not the inspiration for developing it. Does that make sense? In other words, from a young age, we develop these good qualities. Later on, it will manifest in this way. It's not that, oh, now I'm interested in this boy or girl, now I should get serious and try to develop the, you know, proper character. No, it's already a bit late. Not too late, but still, it's not as good as if you already had the character. Does that make sense? If you had the opportunity to make money, right? That's what you're supposed to do. So then you make it. You have your business. It's established. It's all running nicely. Then you decide to get married. You already have facility, right? But if only because you're going to get married, then you think, well, married means you have to have a place. You have to take care. Therefore, I should get some money. Then that means that that relationship either is compromised by not having any facilities and always being working for it, or it's going to be left for a long time until you can get it together. Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the point, is now you develop all your knowledge, character, qualities that are necessary to perform those duties. Right? Then, when that time comes, then life will be very comfortable, easy. You know? Or let's say, natural. Let's put that. It won't be, okay? I shall endeavor, ye sires, even thus to wed a girl. Having given my word, I will not act otherwise. Upon her I will raise offspring for your redemption, so that, ye fathers, ye may attain to eternal regions of bliss, and may rejoice as ye like. So ends the 13th section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Okay, so then we'll end here. Then we'll continue with the 14th pada from Friday. Today's Tuesday, right?
Yes.
So Thursday is the Vyas Puja, and I heard the Bhagavatam class is at 6, and then Darshan is at 8, so basically the two classes won't run on that day.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.